Okay. Before we begin, let's all get on the same page. If you're reading from the Sparkly Book, it's page 436, a new section entitled Dreams and the Body. If you're reading from the second edition, it's page 384, a new section entitled Beyond the Body. In the first edition, it's page 358, again, Beyond the Body. And if you're reading from the JCIM, it's page 182, Dreams and the Body. And in the CIMS edition, it's page 367, Dreams and the Body. Let's take a few moments to be quiet together. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. Two different titles for this new section: Dreams and the Body and Beyond the Body. Dreams and the Body, better express the topic, the subject of this next section. Beyond the Body allows you to hear what you want to hear, rather than impelling you in the direction of hearing the truth. Beyond the Body makes it sound as though when you move beyond the body, you leave the body behind. It becomes non-existent. It becomes nothing. It becomes useless, meaningless, and so on. You could just as easily say, behind the body. What's behind the body? What gives rise to the body? Or you could say underneath or underlying the body. Those words are a little bit better than beyond. The general belief is that you die and you escape the body, and that, therefore, is probably the spiritually correct definition of beyond the body, and it's not. Body. Body is what you call form. It is what I call the visibility and tangibility of ideas in the mind of God that constitute, or the movement of which constitutes, creation. You see? It's the visibility and tangibility of ideas, creation is. The kingdom of heaven is the visibility and tangibility of the movement of creation, which is another way of saying the movement of the mind of God. Now, this past week, I shared with Paul a phrase, which I want to share with everyone else now. The movement of creation is written on your mind. It's not written on space and time. It's written on your mind. It is illuminated in your conscious awareness. Now, before you said, Father, I'd rather do it myself. Father, I'd rather give the definitions. You experienced the kingdom of heaven. You experienced creation as a conscious experience of being that was infinite, because you are the creation of the Father, who withheld nothing of what he was or is from you. And therefore, your conscious awareness is as infinite as the infinite mind of God. And before you got your divorce, you experienced it as a conscious experience. You experienced everything, the things, the visibility and tangibility of creation as constituted of the substance of spirit, not matter. And it wasn't until you got the divorce, reversed the situation, became God yourself by saying, I'm going to take over your job, Father, and I'm going to be the definer of everything. When you did that, the experience of spirit as the substance of ideas became matter. The substance of the physical universe, governed not by the laws of God, but by the laws of physics, which you and everyone else proceeded to make up. You see? Now, that is what everyone is in the process of disengaging from. That interpretation placed upon that which was already perfectly the kingdom of heaven, in which all form, the body of a tree, the body of a car, you will say, the body of your hand, and so on. The body of everything was spirit, and the things were the things of creation. The things were the presence of the Father as mind, and you as the direct expression of the infinite presence of mind had the infinite presence of mind that was not insane. And you grasped, you felt, you were deeply imbued with the consciousness of truth, the truth about everything. And you knew that you were the place, so to speak, in which creation was occurring, because you are the mind in which all of the ideas were being experienced. There was no confusion, and it's the return to that that all of you and are engaged in. Now, going to the book, there is nothing outside you. That is what you must ultimately learn. for it is the realization that the kingdom of heaven, reality, is restored to you. For God created only this, and he did not depart from it, nor leave it separate from himself. You see, the mind of God moved, and God experienced the movement. And God saw the movement and called it good, recognized it to be himself. Self-recognition, wholeness, completeness. And in that completeness, you were. All of his sons and daughters of God were, if I may put it that way. Now God created only this, and he did not depart from it. He didn't alter it. He didn't play with it and change it around and rearrange it and... treat it as though it were something separate from him, which was manipulable. You see, he saw everything that he had made, and behold, verily, it was verily God. It was himself. And he experienced the truth of it. And you don't play with truth. There is no need. Truth is to be felt and experienced and, I'm going to say, infinitely, eternally enjoyed. And because God is the movement of mind, creation is ever unfolding, if I may put it that way. And the truth of it is experienced by God and you. Because God and you are the movement of God, along with everything else in creation. And the truth of it is there to be experienced. And it's your birthright, and I'm going to say your duty, your obligation, your birthright to be experiencing it. When I say it's your duty and obligation, it only has meaning if you're in the process of abandoning other definitions that you've given everything and coming back into your right mind. And so because of what you divinely are, in spite of the fact that you're ignoring who you divinely are, you do have an internal obligation and motivation and impulse to come back into your right mind and experience the truth about you and about everything, which is, there is nothing outside you. The kingdom of heaven, creation in movement, is the dwelling place of the Son of God, who left not his Father, even though he's pretended that he has, and has convinced himself that he has, and fights for the right to see the kingdom of heaven, the ideas of God, the substance of which is spirit, as the material universe, governed by the laws of matter, physics, which have not the eternal properties of life and love, but of sin, sickness, and death. The kingdom of heaven is the dwelling place of the Son of God, who left not his Father, and dwells not apart from him, except in his imagination. Heaven is not a place in time and space, nor a condition. But what's important to understand is that although heaven is not a place, it doesn't mean that everything that you're experiencing, which seems to be in a place, is not the kingdom of heaven. It's some sort of illusion. No, the illusion is the tweak or bias that you've applied to the kingdom of heaven by virtue of insisting upon looking at it independently and making up the definitions yourself. And that causes the kingdom of heaven to seem to be different from and in opposition to the kingdom of heaven. Very simple. It is, the kingdom of heaven is, merely an awareness of perfect oneness and the knowledge that there is nothing else. Nothing outside this oneness and nothing else within. You see? What's within the kingdom of heaven must be only that which is the mind of God moving as the infinite conscious experience of being. That is the movement of creation, and that is the kingdom of heaven. Nothing else can be in it. And when you have all imagined things and created definitions, it would seem that you have brought those into the kingdom of heaven, but you haven't, because nothing else can be there, actually, except what God is being, except what the infinite movement of the infinite mind of God is being. That's all that can be in it. And there is nothing else outside of that, even though you seem to think you have created things on your own, and you know what things are without checking with the Father, without the benefit of revelation, insight, and ultimate healing, and you're crazy. You are experiencing everything falsely. What could God give but knowledge of himself? In the creation of you, what could be brought into play other than the constituting presence of God? Nothing. God can give nothing but knowledge of himself, manifestation of himself, evidence of himself, the visibility and tangibility of himself. And God is spirit, and God is mind, and God is love, and God is truth, and God is principle, and God is soul, and God is spirit. What could God give but knowledge of himself? You could say that God has invested himself in his creation. But it doesn't mean that, like a potter, he has invested himself in the creation of a particular pot. Something different from him that he can fire in a kiln and put on display and sell. You see? God gives knowledge of himself. God expresses himself. And God is the expression. God is what is in the embodiment. God is what is behind the embodiment. God is what underlies the embodiment. God is what is beyond the embodiment, but again, that doesn't feel the same, does it? Beyond sounds like separate. You want to know what comes before the embodiment. And that's the subject. That means that the embodiment is not the subject, but it doesn't make the embodiment unreal. That's key. That's important. Now, the belief that you could give and get something else, something outside yourself, has cost you the awareness of heaven. You see, the awareness of heaven was something you had when you weren't imagining that there was someplace else to be or something else to be there that you could initiate, bring into existence, and make real. And you had it all. All of what the Father was being at the moment when you decided to get a divorce was your conscious experience of being. And you were sane, and you were awake, and you were fulfilling your function as that which acknowledges the truth about creation, feels the truth about it, knows the truth about it, and finds no occasion for challenging it. But the belief that you could give and get something else, something outside yourself, has cost you your sanity, has cost you the awareness of heaven. And suddenly, you're in a material universe where sin, sickness, death, where deterioration and decay, I believe it's called entropy, occurs. It's an inevitable and fundamental element of life. No, it's not. So, it has cost you the awareness of heaven and the loss of your identity. Why? Because you said, I'm fatherless. I'm an orphan. I choose not to acknowledge a source beyond or different from myself, as I am experiencing myself without my sanity. You gave up your identity. By becoming fatherless, you became unidentifiable. You had no heritage, you had no birthright. Being sourceless, you became as meaningless as a lamp that's not plugged into the socket. So it cost you the awareness of heaven and the loss of your identity. And you have done a stranger thing than you yet realize. You have displaced your guilt to your bodies from your minds. Think about it. Think about what I've shared with you about what creation actually is, and what the kingdom of heaven actually is, and what it's your function to engage in relative to it. In other words, to be the conscious awareness of it as what it actually is, which, if I may put it this way, keeps you synchronous with your source, so that nothing is entering into your conscious experience except the truth about what the Father is being, so that you're fulfilling your function of acknowledging and glorifying God, and in that you are being co-creators with God. Something it is impossible for you to be as an independent agent. Yet, a body cannot be guilty, for it can do nothing of itself, not because it's not real, but because that's not its purpose. Every idea of God, whether it's what you call your body, or your hand, or a tree, or any aspect of creation, it's real, but it does not have the capacity to do anything of itself, to become guilty for. All it can be is the presence of what God is manifesting right there, and be the present expression of it, an expression that does indeed constitute a communication, a conveyance of meaning, because the all-knowing mind, represented by every single one in the brotherhood and sisterhood, as well as every created thing, that infinite communication and receipt of, I'm going to say knowledge, but the experience of knowing the truth about each thing, that is your function. That makes what you're experiencing real. But when you got your divorce, when you said, I want to make up the rules, I want to define everything, you did what? You brought into this experience fear and guilt. And the fear and the guilt are intolerable. And so, what you did was you displaced it on creation, which no longer seems like creation to you. Now, suddenly, it's matter, governed by the laws of physics, where entropy dominates, where sin, disease, and death are inevitable. You see? Awful. You don't think you did that. Why do you live in fear? Why are you not surprised if there are accidents? Why are you surprised? Why are you not surprised when a tree dies? Why are you not surprised when a hurricane seems to cause destruction? Because you think you live in a hostile world, a hostile universe, which, for some reason, has enough positive life-affirming characteristics to continue in spite of the conflict. You see? And so, there's always something potentially worth being frightened about, or concerned about, or uneasy about. And so you live with tension, and ulcers, and high blood pressure. And why doesn't that surprise you? Because you have made everything that's not you the object of your guilt. It is what you blame. It is the problem, you see? Yet a body cannot be guilty, for it can do nothing of itself. Really? Well, what about all the pressures that cause the magma to rise and finally burst out in a volcano and come down on Pompeii and other cities and destroy and kill? Yeah. You're right. Something's wrong. And it's time to right the wrong. It's time to have the shift in consciousness where you are no longer a mind inside a body looking out at a world and universe that's outside the body to the place where you're recognizing that, quote, there is nothing outside you. Now, obviously that can't mean there's nothing outside your body. The definition of you must be something different. There is nothing outside the conscious awareness of being that you are, even though you are misunderstanding and misdefining your mind. You say it's the result of nerve endings and synapses and the movement of electrical currents through a hunk of matter called a brain. And that's why you think, and that's why you are conscious. Why, you might as well say that everything you're experiencing is being created by a hunk of matter inside a head, and there still isn't any reality out there. It's all a physical illusion caused by electricity moving through meat. I mean, really. Yet a body cannot be guilty, for it can do nothing of itself. You who think you hate your bodies... Wait a minute. I hear someone say, well, I don't hate my body. Well, are you afraid of what it will do if you go into a ward of a hospital where there's are highly communicable diseases present? Ooh. Would you do that? Would you stand out in the middle of a freeway in a heavily trafficked lane? No. Because you're afraid of what might happen to your body and what it might do. It might cease to function, this physical thing that it is. You think that makes you happy? You think that your fear of death is not a manifestation of the hate you have for your body? Your distrust of it is hateful. It's not love. It's not harmonizing. It doesn't lower your blood pressure even from a physical standpoint. It increases it. It's unhealthy. If you fear your body, if you fear what it may do when you get old, then you're not happy with your body. You're just ignoring your distress with it. But the fact is that you do hate your body, and you will hate it until you come to that point where you're willing to make that shift of consciousness from body identification, world identification, to mind identification. And my movement of my hand indicating the head and using the word mind is not good. It doesn't represent the truth. Conscious awareness is a definitionless, boundaryless experience in which infinity is experienced. You who think you hate your bodies deceive yourselves. You hate your minds, for guilt has entered into them, and they would remain separate, which they cannot do. Your mind would remain separate from your partner's mind. Your mind would remain separate from my mind. Your mind would stay separate from the mind of God. That's the goal. Those are the ground rules. That's the starting point and ending point. And that's why it's insanity. It's insanity because it's the ridiculous idea that the mind of God can be confused and insane. And it's impossible. And it's that belief what we're engaged in undoing. Minds are joined. We've said before, there are no private thoughts. Minds are joined, bodies are not. Only by assigning to the mind the properties of the body does separation seem to be possible. Well, my mind is functioning inside my brain, and your mind is functioning inside your brain, and you take your brain with you to New York, and I take my brain with me to San Francisco. They're not in the same place. So, the characteristics of the body are used to define the characteristics of the mind and seem to make it separate. And yet, many of you have had one or more experiences of, in the quietness, knowing what was going on with someone else. Or being aware of a need when there was no physical communication of the need, and you were able to respond in a way that saved a life or made a significant difference. All of you have experienced, at times, the boundarylessness of minds and the inseparability in mind of you from your brothers and sisters. It's a simple fact. The definition applied to the mind that starts with the current definitions of the body, although you swear by them, are false. Dare to look at it. Don't be bound by an illusion. Don't be committed to an illusion. Minds are joined, bodies are not. Only by assigning to the mind the properties of the body does separation seem to be possible. And it is mind that seems to be fragmented and private and alone. Unless occasionally you dare to pray and get an answer. But we'll leave it like this for now. It is mind that seems to be fragmented and private and alone. It's guilt, again, that which came into existence when you got your divorce and decided to be independent, its guilt, which keeps it separate, is projected to the body. Which suffers and dies because it is attacked to hold the separation in the mind and let it not know its identity. Mind cannot attack, but it can make fantasies and direct the body to act them out. And it can create fantasies that interprets on occasion that the body is acting them out when it isn't, or that it will act out by picking up a virus, a very virulent virus, and suffer and die very quickly. Yet it is never what the body does that seems to satisfy. Unless the mind believes the body is actually acting out its fantasies, it will attack the body by increasing the projection of its guilt upon it. You see, I'm going to tell you something. If you were to begin to look at your world, and you were willing to consider that your world is innocent and is actually the kingdom of heaven, reflecting the nature and character and being of God, you would be withdrawing your judgment. You would be withdrawing your projection of guilt upon it. And what? The world would change? No, you would find that the communication of all of the ideas of God that are rendered visible and tangible in creation would be communicated to you, because their communication is, their purpose is to communicate their reason for being, to communicate their meaning. Because nothing in the kingdom of heaven is held separate in any way from any other part of creation. Now that's what would happen. But that would undo the dream, wouldn't it? And it's still very important for you to believe that you have autonomy, that you can be an independent agent, that you can create, that you can control. That's very important to you. And so, if you were actually to begin to be willing to look at your world and find it innocent of the things you imagined it to be, and that you were confident it would do, your ego would become very frightened and would increase the definitions of guilt applied to your world. And you would find your world, you would find yourself, you would find yourself experiencing greater fear about your world. You would find the world to be less dependable than it had been before, and therefore more frightening. And that would keep you busy defending yourself to maintain your independence. You see? So, unless the mind believes the body is actually acting out its fantasies, it will attack the body by increasing the projection of its guilt upon it. Understand this, because as you engage in the process of awakening, as you engage in the holy instant, and you begin to acknowledge the world and universe as innocent, as not being governed by laws of physics, where entropy is an absolute given, you will find yourself being challenged. You will find the ego trying to frighten you more, to project the false characterization of you that you're employing. I'm sorry, this is me, Paul. I lost it. The point is, don't be surprised as you begin to practice the holy instant to find that the fear of the world in you will increase. Why? Because it's your way of not having to abandon your authority, your integrity that comes from a well-developed integrity and authority of you in your own right. Making the world scarier causes you to withdraw your willingness to see it as innocent, to see it as though it might actually be the kingdom of heaven, that it actually might be constituted of the substance of spirit instead of the substance of matter, and that instead of being governed by the laws of physics, it's where God's laws prevail, and only God's laws prevail, because only God is what is present in the movement of creation, including you. Again, unless the mind believes the body is actually acting out its fantasies, it will attack the body by increasing the projection of its guilt upon it. Again, to be clear, the way it projects guilt upon it is by making it seem more fearful to you, more threatening to you, therefore calling for you to engage in defense against some part of the kingdom of heaven, which is intent upon and only capable of communicating its divine meaning to all of creation, including you, to be received, not rejected by you. In this increasing projection of guilt on the world, the mind is clearly delusional. It cannot attack, but it maintains it can. What mind? Well, the mind of the orphan. The independent mind that has denied its source and lost its recognition of its union with God and its function of co-creating with God, you see? In this, the mind is clearly delusional. It cannot attack, but it maintains it can and uses what it does to hurt the body to prove it can. Now, that doesn't just mean to hurt the body that you call your arms, legs, torso, head, feet, and so on. It means that it does what it uses what it does to hurt all of creation. Hurt it by misunderstanding it, misdefining it, and judging it according to the incorrect definition, ending up hating it, denying its meaning, relegating it to illusion, when it's something actual, to be embraced and experienced as what it truly is. The mind cannot attack, but it can deceive itself through imagination, and this is all it does when it believes it has attacked the body, what you call your body, or the world, by incorrectly defining it and defending itself against the world. It can project its guilt, but it will not lose it through projection. And though it clearly can misperceive the function of the body, again, any part of creation, any aspect of the visibility and tangibility of creation, although it clearly can misperceive the function of the body, it cannot change its function from what the Holy Spirit establishes it to be. The use of imagination changes nothing and does not alter your right mind's capacity to connect with you and illumine in you your true awareness of what everything really is. The body was not made by love. What body? The body seen by the one who got the divorce. It was made through the lens of fear and guilt. And so the definitions always involved some element of negativity that called for self-protection against it. You see, the definitions given were not made by love, were not made by joining with the Father to see what reality is really being right there where you're insisting a material universe is functioning. The body was not made by love, yet love does not condemn it and can use it lovingly, respecting what the Son of God has made and using it to save him from illusions. Why can the body be used that way? Because it's really the visibility and tangibility of God. And so it can be used while you're still entertaining false definitions of it to keep your attention where transformation of your mind can occur, and as a result, because you're looking at the kingdom of heaven, it ceases to be the material universe governed by the laws of matter and begins to behave like spirit. Again, the key is to be looking where the transformation in your mind is going to occur, to keep it where the kingdom of heaven is. It's not appropriate for you to look beyond it. It's not appropriate for you to rise above it. It's important for you to look at where reality is, so that the movement of the Holy Spirit can cause you to be paying attention as that which you had determined was mortal and fearsome and dangerous shifts into a conscious experience of the substance of spirit, the nature of which is love, and the function of which is to communicate to you its divinity, can register with you as you wake up. Would you not have the instruments of separation reinterpreted as means for salvation and used for purposes of love? Would you not welcome and support the shift from fantasies of vengeance to release from them? Your perception of the body, the definitions you've given to it, can clearly be sick. But project not this upon the body. Project this not upon the visibility and tangibility of the ideas of God that are the kingdom of heaven. For your wish to make destructive what cannot destroy can have no real effect at all. And what God created is only what He would have it be, being His will. You cannot make His will destructive. You can make fantasies in which your will conflicts with His, but that is all. Four more key words. But that is all. You see, this is very significant. These are key points. And remember, the very first sentence, there is nothing outside you. That's what the point is. That's the shift that needs to be made from body identification, meaning all forms, shifting from body identification to mind identification, in which you, as mind, the presence of God, stop translating the substance of spirit and therefore of all creation into matter. Separate from you, at odds with you, dangerous to you. As you go through this next week, I encourage you, as many times during the day as you remember to do it and have fun with it, look at a thing and say, oh, that's not matter. Oh, that's not matter. Oh, that's the substance of spirit. Oh, that's an idea. Even if I touch it and it feels solid, that is an experience of an idea. That is a mind experience, not a body experience. And it's the experience of an idea felt by mind, and not a table felt by a finger. Matter out there. Have fun with this week. And as I said, do it as frequently as you remember to do it. And let it be fun, even if it seems nonsensical to you. Because that's the way you will begin to make a shift so that when you look at something, when you see something, it will not be your automatic assumption that it's what you always thought it was and that it is something you need to get beyond. I love you. And I hope you have a really interesting and wonderful time engaging in this practice this coming week. It's not all supposed to be negative, hard work. A lift, an inspiration, can cause it to be much easier to abandon a misperception, a false belief, a commitment to ignorance.